killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
The sound of New Year's, so predictable. Except that last couple of sounds, although a few movies have capitalized on the contrast of New Year's partying and disaster. That's kind of fun, when shit goes sideways or upside down. That was literally the case in the disaster movie The Poseidon Adventure, where it's New Year's Eve on some gigantic cruise ship, and at the stroke of midnight, the fucking thing capsizes. Suddenly, everybody's hanging on to the chandeliers as the ocean starts to flood the ship. Happy New Year. By the way, radio legend Don Imus is dead. I have some personal remembrances of Don, and I'll get to them in a little bit. But first, while I do dig Christmas, I'm kind of a New Year's Grinch. I guess that's no secret. Somebody posted a very funny gif. And that's GIF, by the way, not JIF. JIF is peanut butter. Somebody posted this GIF from Forrest Gump with legless, wheelchair-bound Gary Sinise's face just peering over the top of a cocktail bar as a New Year's party rages behind him. Gary looks miserable. So somebody posted that GIF with the tag, "Come on, Larry." It is funny, but a bit of an exaggeration. I like a fun party. I've thrown a few that got going so good, they were shut down by the cops. But the New Year's thing never lights my jets, because it kind of sort of falls under the category of what a friend of mine once called forced gaiety. This woman and I worked together. No, we were not involved, just friends. And several times a year, our massive corporate employer would have off-site meetings or client schmooze fests where everyone was supposed to have the time of their lives while simultaneously being on their best behavior, drinking hardly anything, stroking surly clients, and kissing bosses' asses. And one evening, as we walked into some festive hotel ballroom together, she turned to me and said through a clenched teeth, Joker-style smile, "Ready for some forced gaiety?" The TV New Year's parties always get me. If we're having the time of our lives, why the fuck are we watching TV? Maybe if it was just some background noise to the orgy you're involved in, okay. But do you really want to make Ryan Seacrest or Anderson Cooper a part of your orgy? And why, 7 years after his death, is it still Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve? Dick must have had a hell of a contract. I bet his heirs are very happy about this. Not to throw rocks at Dick, however, like Imus. I knew Dick a little bit, and he was a very nice guy. And he really set the bar for professional broadcasting. We could use a few more guys with his class. For a week or two now, we've been bombarded by two things. Retrospectives, which, face it, is mostly a recap of everyone famous who croaked in the past year, and predictions for the next year. In general, I am not a fan of New Year's, even as a small kid. I remember my parents letting me and my older brother stay up to watch that stupid ball drop in Times Square, and staring at the TV. And the crowds of hundreds of thousands of people standing out in the cold, sometimes in the sleet, wearing idiotic hats with elastic chin straps. Another thing that drives me nuts, hats with chin straps. And goofy Elton John-style glasses with the year spelled out. And then, the big countdown as the ball slid down a pole. And then, all I could think, then as now, was the line from the Peggy Lee song, "Is that all there is?" I mean, what the fuck is supposed to happen when the hand on the clock takes one tiny tick past 12 and 1 year or one decade or one millennium, as we had 20 years ago, suddenly morphs into the next, and it invariably culminates in the shittiest song ever written in the history of the world. Auld Lang Syne. And we say the dumbest shit about New Year's as it relates to our lives, like 2019 or insert any year was awful, 2020 is going to be much better, as if fate can read a goddamn calendar. And then the predictions, ooh, the seers and psychics and oracles of every stripe. And so many people buy into them, like blind Bulgarian mystic Baba Vanga. Don't you love that name? Baba Vanga, on you and your whole family. The name does sound like a curse. Baba Vanga is said to have predicted 9/11 and Brexit, and has foretold trouble and darkness for the year ahead. They dubbed her the Nostradamus of the Balkans. That's a red flag right there. Nostradamus was full of shit. Baba has several predictions for the coming year, that there will be an assassination attempt on Vlad Putin from within the Kremlin. She thinks Donald Trump will fall ill with a mysterious illness, which will leave him deaf and with a brain tumor. But then, she made those same predictions for 2019. Another forecast she has is the destruction of Asia. That's a biggie. That's more than half the world population. That ought to brighten up the faces of those climate change sourpusses, huh? 4 billion fewer people would certainly lower the carbon footprint. Baba Vanga says a meteorite will fall on Russia, but she doesn't say how big it will be. Maybe it'll be pebble-sized, and that's the one that will pop Putin in the Kremlin. Baba Vanga has fan pages that claim she has 85% accuracy. But what you must really dig to find is the fact that Baba Vanga has been dead for nearly 10 years. And there's no record of her predicting her own demise. I have my own predictions for 2020. The world will continue to rotate and revolve. The sun will shine, rain will fall, babies will be born, and people will die. Same as always. Now back to Don Imus. If you were alive anywhere from the mid-70s through 2018 and living in the United States, you probably heard Don Imus. He just died last week, and it was one of the bigger celebrity passings of the year. When I was in college, I interviewed Imus for a magazine. I did not know Imus or anybody who knew him. I didn't know he probably had an agent and a press agent. I just called the studio line and waited and waited and finally got through to somebody and told them what I was after, and amazingly, they put me through to, as he later came to be called, the I-Man. And just like that, he said okay, and told me to come to the studio in a few days. So before dawn, I got on a subway train in Queens and took it to one of the most famous addresses on the globe, 30 Rockefeller Plaza, home of Saturday Night Live, Johnny Carson, Jimmy Fallon, and countless other monsters of entertainment. In the lobby was a security guard at a desk. I told him I was there to interview Don Imus. The guy looked at me like I was bullshitting. He picked up a phone, punched a few numbers. Then he said my name and mangled it. It sounded as if he told Imus Harry Wagner was here to see him. Then he hung up the phone, looked at me and said, "Mr. Imus says he doesn't know you." Ooh. At that moment, echoing through my mind were two words that have been my companions as long as I can remember. Now what? How do I get past this idiot with the red blazer and square badge? For a moment, I thought maybe Imus was an asshole and decided I wasn't worth his time. Maybe he'd forgotten about our meeting. Maybe he thought I'd been pranking him and had pranked me in return. It was around 6:30 a.m. Even the early bird office workers had yet to show up. The place was deserted, but for a square badge and some maintenance guy pushing one of those big floor polishers across the marble. On the walls around me were massive murals of presumably the workers building the structure in which I stood. The style of art was weird and ominous, like Karl Marx meets Michelangelo. There I stood, with a cheap cassette recorder under my arm, a pen and notebook in my pocket in case the recorder failed, and a 35mm camera hanging from my shoulder. Against a far wall was a bank of public phones. I had some change in my pocket. I had no inside number for Imus, hadn't thought to ask him for one. I had to call the same number the entire tri-state area used when trying to call him. It seemed hopeless, but I'd come this far. I punched in the digits. Incredibly, he picked up. There was no mistaking his voice. He had a classic radio voice. I told him my name, and he said,
"Where the fuck are you?"
I told him what had just happened with the security guy, and his reply was,
"You tell that security moron I'll let you up here, I'll come down there and punch his fucking face."
Then he hung up. Despite my apprehension, I could not stop laughing, and I fully intended to repeat Imus's instructions to the square badge, verbatim. As I walked back to the elevators, that same security guy had the phone to his ear and he was saying, "Yes, sir, yes, sir." He looked at me and said, "Go right up, sir. Mr. Imus is expecting you." As I stood in the elevator, I wondered what the hell had just happened. Had the security guy only pretended to call Imus? Or had Imus been fucking with both of us? I'll never know. When I got off the elevator, a very pretty girl was waiting for me, and she walked me to the studio, which was big and plush and awe-inspiring. Sitting behind a microphone was arguably the biggest radio personality in the world. Sure, there were other big names in radio and other big markets around the country, but none were soon to be syndicated nationally like Imus. None had smashed the AM radio format of meaningless patter, time and weather checks between talking in top 40 hits. Only Imus was saying outrageous things. The guy was indisputably the pioneer. When I walked into the studio, Imus was talking into the mic. He nodded at me, and he hooked a cowboy boot around the leg of a wheelchair and pulled it near and pointed to it. I sat down. He chain-smoked. His brand was L&M. For several hours, I sat there and watched him talk over 50,000 clear channel watts to millions of people. For much of the time, tourists would file past the thick glass window of the studio. The hot women he would wave to or blow kisses. The guys he'd ignore. To a few, he flipped the bird. The same girl who brought me into the studio occasionally came by, and each time Imus would eyeball her from head to toe, she would giggle. Such behavior was not only okay, it was expected. They were paying the dude to be outrageous, weren't they? And she really didn't seem to mind. She seemed to enjoy the attention. As I sat there watching him work, I soon realized it was all shtick. Sometimes when a song played, he'd tip his chair back, put his boots up on the console, his hands behind his head, and close his eyes. I think he was recharging himself for the next quarter hour. I snapped a bunch of pictures, asked him some questions, but didn't feel like I'd done much of an interview. And suddenly, he was playing his outro theme, and the show was over. As if he'd read my mind, he said, "That wasn't much of an interview. Follow me." And so I followed him into a big conference room. He sat down and said, "Go ahead, ask me anything you want." And I said, "Okay, how much do they pay you?" He answered, "A lot more than you'd imagine, and a lot less than I want, you nosy fuck." I just about fell off my chair. I'd had the flu a couple weeks before and still had a lingering cough. My laughing triggered a coughing fit, and as it subsided, Imus asked,
"Do you have tuberculosis?"
Well, that only made me laugh harder, and more coughing. He said something about maybe I was malnourished, and then told me we were going to his restaurant, where he was going to buy me lunch. We took the elevator to the street, and right there at the curb was his custom van. I guess it was a promotional gimmick. It was black and had stained glass windows on the sides and in back. One of his stock characters was the Reverend Billy Saul Hargis from Del Rio, Texas, the golden buckle of the Bible Belt. The van had a vanity plate. Might have been Hargis. I'm not sure. The rear bumper was designed like a prayer kneeler. As we walked to his restaurant, fans shouted and shook his hand and asked for his autograph. He was a first-rate celebrity. At his place, of course, we got the red carpet treatment. I ordered a massive cheeseburger. I don't recall what his choice was. He was a hell of a lot of fun, always cracking jokes, flirting with the waitresses. As I recall, he greeted the maitre d' by saying, "Good afternoon, bug eye." Oh yeah, I almost forgot. Imus was a photography buff and he had a big Nikon camera. And before we hit the street for the restaurant, we stopped in the lobby. There was a store there and he bought a bunch of film. And as the guy was plucking the rolls off the shelves, Imus was shooting him in the head with rubber bands. As we ate lunch, he asked me about school and what my life was like, and he always had a funny comment. He didn't need a script. He didn't need a writer. He was the real deal. Lunch went by even faster than his show. Imus told me he'd had fun hanging with me. How's that for class? Then he reached into a satchel he carried. He pulled out a manila envelope. Inside was a glossy 8x10 of himself holding a microphone. It looked like it had been taken at a club where he was doing stand-up. He scribbled on the picture, stuffed it back in the envelope, and handed it to me. We walked outside onto the street. He shook my hand and wished me luck. He was very genuine. No star bullshit. He stepped into a taxi and disappeared. I opened the envelope, slid out the picture. It said, "Hey Larry, here's hoping you get lots of pussy when you grow up. Don Imus." Every radio guy, every talk show host, from Howard Stern to this podcaster, owes something to Don Imus. Before him, radio was mostly formulaic bullshit, where job number one was to be inoffensive. Somehow, Imus pissed off people in droves, and still was massively successful. He became quite a philanthropist. His charity of choice was kids with cancer. And he didn't just put his money where his mouth was. He opened his heart and his home and ran a ranch in New Mexico that helped many such kids over the years. And now he's gone. But not forgotten. I liked him. A lot. Somewhere I have that picture Imus gave me, as well as the magazine story and some shots of him in the studio. Maybe if I get enough pressure from you, I'll put on my miner's helmet and dig him up, post him on the show page. Which is, by the way, thatlarryshow.com. You can swing by there and subscribe to this show if you really like it. You can click the Patreon button and support the show while you get access to dozens of bonus episodes, signed books, custom recordings, and more. I'll be back next Tuesday with part one of my amazing interview with another legend, John McAfee, Sent to Millionaire, digital pioneer, madman extraordinaire, and global fugitive. John told me things he has told no one else, so don't miss it. Until that time, Happy New Year, and take no shit. Especially you, Don, wherever you are.
I am Imus of the Morning, and it's 5 minutes past the hour. Coming up this morning, man, it's going to be a great show this morning. Well, it will be a great show.
You going home?